Next case is number 25-1435, United States against Kenneth Strickland. Mr. Orlando?
Yes.
May it please the court. My name is Jason Orlando. I'm a CJA attorney representing the defendant in this matter, the appellant, Kenneth Strickland.
Can I just ask at the outset, do you have any, have you dug into why it is that our circuit seems to be by its lonesome in having a model jury instruction that has the says the government must prove beyond a reasonable doubt that the evidence is the same as alleged in the indictment?
I'm not
in custody.
First, I'd like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Yes,
right. I'm sorry.
Thank you. No, I know. I thank you all for inviting me to have this conversation with this court.
In other words, no other circuit has that, and I'm just trying to figure out why is it, do you have any indication or clue as to why this was put in around 06?
With respect to that question, I myself, the government made that representation that no other circuit has that. I did not verify that,
so I cannot comment on why it was put here. And I'm having trouble finding the reasoning was.
Well, I think it was put here because it's an accurate statement of what the law should be or is, and at least for this circuit it is. This is an instruction that's been in existence for over 20 years. It was amended, all the model jury instructions were amended in 2021. That language was not changed.
But at a basic level, is chain of custody an element of this crime?
No, but the language, yes, to the extent that the central fact in a drug case, now this was a drug case, is whether or not drugs were sold. Whether or not drugs were sold. That is the essential element, the essential fact. And I would also like to go back. And whether drugs were sold is determined by A, here there was sales to an undercover agent. So undercover agent purchases drugs allegedly from my client, or purchases a substance that they say are drugs, gives them to another agent, who then gives them to somewhere else, who then gives them to somewhere else.
Mr. Orlando, audio recorded, so stay on the mic if you would.
Right, sorry about that. And they end up getting tested.
And then they're presented,
Your Honor, in court as drugs, as the central element. So the chain of custody, not the evidence that was taken, allegedly purchased from my client, and then presented to the jury with support from, you know, reports from DEA labs, New Jersey State Police labs, other labs, that's the same substance, that is the same exact substance. That is central. That is a central element of the crime.
But
it is the central
element. Conspiracy, I have it as four. Two or more persons agreed to distribute or possess with intent to distribute a controlled substance, one. Two, the defendant was a party or a member of that group. Three, the defendant joined the agreement knowingly. And four, the substance was fentanyl or heroin in this
case.
Isn't that game, set, and match in terms of what's required?
Right.
If you say, okay, in switching it and taking it to the lab and whatnot, there was a problem in terms of the chain of custody, wouldn't that be an argument to the jury that goes to the weight of evidence, but not as to an element of the crime?
No, because it goes.
So every other circuit is wrong, and we're the only one that's right?
I'm not an expert in every other circuit, so I cannot comment on what their other jury instructions are that might cover it. But in this case, you have to establish that it was fentanyl. Right? Heroin or fentanyl were the two drugs at issue in this case. You have to establish that. And if you have reasonable doubt that the drugs that were presented to you as a jury are the same drugs or the same substance that was allegedly bought from my client, then you cannot prove the case.
What evidence was put in at trial that we were dealing with a controlled substance of fentanyl or heroin?
What evidence is they presented the bags. They presented the bags that they said my client sold to the officer. And there was serious issues with that chain of custody of those bags and how they were presented to the jury. They were in the evidence. There was reports done linking the reports to the bags that were presented in the evidence. So our position as a defense was always that, look, there's problems with the chain of custody. There is reasonable doubt whether these are the same drugs that were purchased or, you know, were purchased from, you know, allegedly my client. So that was always an issue. When we first got into the case, you know, we always look at the model jury instructions. Any case, civil, plaintiff, defense, you know, criminal as a defense, and you look at it and you say, okay, this is an issue here. There was no chain of custody log, which we knew existed or should have existed. There's no chain of custody log. We moved to dismiss based upon that. We finally got it. And there was huge problems, Your Honor. This was a big, big problem in this case. And the fact that key language was removed.
Are we saying essentially the same thing if I say it to you this way? Chain of custody matters only to the extent it affects an element that does need to be proven beyond a reasonable doubt.
Correct. And that's what the instruction says. And Your Honor, you know, in U.S. v. Haywood.
It doesn't say that.
It says two things. It says the defense has raised the issue of defects in the chain of custody. You may consider any defects in determining the authenticity of this evidence and what weight to give it. The government must prove beyond a reasonable doubt that the evidence in question is the same as the described evidence alleged in the indictment introduced during the trial. And that's the key language. The government must prove beyond a reasonable doubt that was removed. And I would just say that in Haywood, you know, this court said, Haywood, the defendant, and this is a quote, has a due process right to, quote, proof beyond a reasonable doubt of every fact necessary to constitute the crime with which he is charged. And that's In re Winship. And In re Winship, the full quote from In re Winship, where the reasonable doubt standard was set forth, is again, quote, lest there remain any doubt about the constitutional stature of the reasonable doubt standard, we explicitly hold that the due process clause protects the accused against conviction except upon proof beyond a reasonable doubt of every fact necessary to constitute the crime with which he is charged.
Where are you reading that from?
In re Winship, 397 U.S. 358, 364, and it's quoted in U.S. v. Haywood, 363 F3rd, 200, 3rd Circuit, 2004.
Do you have any cases that, or have any courts held that the government has the burden of proving chain of custody beyond reasonable doubt?
Yeah, I mean, well, yes, because I would say implicitly in our circuit, this instruction has been given in multiple cases.
No, I'm cases. Look, the instruction is 100% your way. That's going to be conceded, I think, by Mr. Romano. My question is, and consistent with what Judge Ambrose was asking you about how we are an outlier from other circuits, have any courts in published opinions written that the government has the burden to prove chain of custody beyond a reasonable doubt?
Your Honor, I think when we go back to what Judge Ambrose was asking before is the correct statement of what our argument is. It's that the chain of custody must be proven.
I didn't say that.
Or chain of custody becomes.
I'm not asking you about your argument. Let me push you a little bit, if I might, on the question.
Okay.
And I'm gonna show my cards up front. I think the answer is no, but you can show that I'm mistaken. Have any courts in written opinions held the chain of custody must be proven by the government beyond a reasonable doubt?
Any courts in the entire country? Your Honor, I can't.
Do you have any?
Well, I would say that U.S. v. Clark is close.
Okay.
I would say that U.S. v. Haywood is also
Tell
close.
Us, what does Clark say that makes it close to that?
Well, I think Clark is a 1970 case from the circuit. I think it goes to the question that Judge Skierka had previously, about the difference between admissibility and proving something beyond a reasonable doubt, or authentication of proving something beyond a reasonable doubt. In that case, you know, there was, this instruction was basically given by the district court judge in this circuit, you know, noted it as saying that the facts have to be proven beyond a reasonable doubt. And again, you know, Haywood was a case involving chain of custody, or was, no, it didn't involve chain of custody. Let me backtrack. I am not sure if there's a case that says that chain of custody needs to be proven beyond a reasonable doubt. I do think, though, that that's different than what the language of the instruction that was taken out of here says, which is that the government must prove beyond a reasonable doubt that the drugs entered into evidence at trial were the same that were supposedly sold by the defendant. So in trying to prove that—
Is that the same thing as chain of custody?
Yes and no. I mean, chain of custody goes to how those drugs were handled and whether there could have been issues in it. And look, that was very important in drug cases because of the mandatory minimum sentences and the weight. So—
And your effort would be to raise a question in the jury's mind as to whether the drugs were actually the drugs?
Yes.
Okay. And chain of custody may or may not have an impact on that.
Correct.
Depending on the facts of the case.
Right. And you okay. have reasonable doubt that these are the drugs. And if okay. you have reasonable doubt that these are the drugs, then you wouldn't be able
and to... And whether to these are the drugs is an element of the offense.
Right. And okay. I would just say, too, Your Honor, with respect to this, that in the arguments about, you know, the all-state survey, is this was not an argument questioning the legality of the model jury instruction that was made below at all by the government.
But we can affirm for any reason supported right, by the records.
I understand that, Your Honor, but I'm just saying that we only first addressed this argument in reply.
I understand.
Because right? it only came up in opposition, so we didn't right. necessarily have the time to go through and look at every case from every jurisdiction. And we were, you know, quite frankly, caught a little bit off guard by the argument that the model jury instruction itself would misstate the law.
Right. You've saved time for rebuttal,
yes.
so we'll hear you then. Thank you, Mr. Orlando. Mr. Romano.
May it please the court, John Romano for the United States. The instruction that was given here was correct. The instruction that was requested, the model jury instruction, is wrong. There is no circuit that says that. There's no case that says that. And the model instruction itself is not binding on this court.
Do you know how it got in there? Because when you look at the commentary, it's a little bit different than the sentences in the model instruction. The commentary says, at least the current commentary, says that a defect in the chain of custody goes to the weight of its of the evidence, not its admissibility. So that seems to
true.
Be what every circuit's done, and yet you've got that sentence still sticking out in
yeah,
the actual model instruction.
Idea. No idea how it got into the commentary. And as I point out,
No, the commentary is helpful, right?
Well, I mean, I have no idea how it got into the instruction. And as I point out in the brief, and one of my jobs is giving advice to AUSAs who ask me questions, and one of the first things I do is look at this court's model jury instruction commentary, because it gives helpful cases, it gives ideas. This commentary is completely silent on this issue. And I think it's silent on this issue because there's nothing to support it. There's absolutely no authority to support that the government has to prove chain of custody beyond a reasonable doubt. And Judge Ambrose, I think your question before was accurate. The identity, there are elements that maybe flow from chain of custody, just like any other piece of evidence. There might be eyewitness testimony. There might be other evidence. The jury considers all of that evidence, and it decides whatever weight it wants to give it. And at the end of the day, the burden of proof goes only to the elements. So if they had doubts—
Right, but Winship says something different. I was a little— surprised and interested to hear Mr. Orlando's argument that Winship says you have to prove every fact beyond a reasonable doubt. Is that a mistake in Winship, or is that contextual?
I think the rest of the sentence is facts necessary to prove the offense. In other words, this was fentanyl. That would be a fact necessary to prove this offense. That this was a controlled substance. That would be a fact necessary to prove this offense. That the drugs that are sitting on the table at trial are the same drugs, that is not an element that is necessary to prove this offense. And in this case, for example, they were selling fentanyl. The co-conspirators said they were selling fentanyl. The undercover was buying fentanyl. So there was plenty of evidence. If the jurors thought, you know what, I'm not so sure, maybe the cops messed this up a little bit, I don't know that that's the exact same evidence that he was selling, they could still convict. And if they had enough doubts about the weight of that evidence, then they would have said, you know what, we have a reasonable doubt that this was fentanyl, or we have a reasonable doubt about the weight, or we have a reasonable doubt about some other element. But again, it's the elements that need to be proven beyond a reasonable doubt, not the underlying evidence. It's just one, you know, that this court often says it's a brick in the wall. If the jurors thought maybe that's not the same evidence, then they would have found, you know, they had a reasonable doubt about one of the elements. I do have one other thing to raise, Your Honor, and I think maybe this is the right panel to raise, and it came up on Mr. Orlando's argument. I see all the time now in reply briefs citing either Dowdell or citing Payo for the theory that the government can't raise an argument that wasn't raised below. When we're the appellee, this court could affirm for any reason, and it includes arguments that the government didn't raise below. And that's, Your Honor wrote a recent opinion on that called Patel. So I would just urge this court to maybe clarify that so that...
what's unclear about it? In Dowdell, the government was the appellant, as Mr. Coyne was, you know, painfully aware, trying to save that district court transcript. He did yeoman's work, but wasn't successful.
Exactly.
I mean, so where's the confusion? What are we supposed to write? Read Dowdell more carefully or pay attention to the fact that whether it's appellant or appellee has great significance in the Third Circuit? That seems obvious from our jurisprudence, does it not?
That might be the case. But as you can see from the reply brief in this case, that does cite Dowdell, and I've often seen Payo cite it as well. And again, a different type of case than the one we're dealing with here, where you're the appellee. You could raise arguments that weren't raised, but it's a basis for affirmance, and this court, of course, can affirm for any reason on the record.
Well, Payo, I believe Judge Ambrose and I had a little disagreement.
That's why this is the perfect panel for this issue.
Really? We would disagree.
If the court has no further questions, rely on my brief and ask this court to affirm.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Romano. Let's hear rebuttal from Mr. Orlando.
Your Honor, I'd just like to go back to Clark again for where this instruction comes from. Again, in Clark, again, Third Circuit opinion from 1970, the instruction, the case that it was looked upon favorably from the district judge was as followed. If you are not convinced beyond a reasonable doubt that those bags on which the defendant's fingerprints were found are the bags that were found by those policemen, Cypher and William, there on Railroad Street or near Railroad Street on the night of March 15th, 1967, then this defendant should be acquitted. So again, this is...
So if you put in something relating to chain of custody and the commentary says it goes to the weight, a jury could still say there's so little weight there, we can't find beyond a reasonable doubt that Mr. Smith, whatever, in this case, Mr. Strickland, is guilty. But that doesn't make an element of the conspiracy, and it doesn't make it an element of the crime of distribution or possession.
I'm not sure I follow. In other words, drugs were sold.
You're a juror.
Right.
And they say among the elements you have to prove is that you're dealing with a controlled substance. And if the jury, for some reason, because the defense puts in evidence about there's a real screw up here on chain of custody, and we don't think that he had fentanyl or heroin. Jurors could say, boy, there is a problem with the weight of the evidence here, and they may not have, beyond a reasonable doubt, proved that it was fentanyl, and therefore they acquit.
Right.
You still get to bring in the evidence relating to chain of custody, it's just not an element of the crime.
But still, we need to be proved beyond a reasonable doubt that it was fentanyl.
And I just said, I'm putting myself in the head of a juror, I'm thinking, okay, they have a burden, and this goes to the weight of the evidence, and it was so flimsy, I'm not going to go and say beyond a reasonable doubt that the final element of the crime, the controlled substance, was there. You still get, you end up in the same spot. The question is, why is every other circuit different than ours with respect to that final sentence in the model jury instruction that seems to be at odds a bit with the commentary that goes along with it?
As to the other circuits, I can't comment, Your Honor. But I would say that this is an essential part of our of the jury instructions for this circuit. We relied on those jury instructions in coming up with our defense. The argument that it was an incorrect statement of the law was never made. So when we closed, we presented our case. The whole idea was that it needed to be, they needed to prove, the government needed to prove. They brought in the drugs, right, for the shock and awe value of having all of these drugs, and the DEA people with all their great credentials came and testified about these drugs and how dangerous they are and how much fentanyl's in them. Our defense was that they need to be the same, relying on that jury instruction. So I would argue, I'm arguing, one, I don't think the jury instruction is wrong. I think that the government's going to present them and say, these are the drugs, this is the central element, this is the reason why we're all here, because these drugs were sold by that man over there. That was the case. If they cannot, if there's reasonable doubt as to whether that's true, then that is a correct instruction.
If you're a strict textualist, you look to the actual instruction and not so much the commentary, but one is quite tempted to look at the commentary and say, if it says wait, that's what they really meant. And you still win at trial with defense counsel by saying, yeah, they're telling you that's fentanyl, but guess what? That ain't what they got him for when they arrested him.
Yes. But again, and Haywood again is instructive because it's speculation about what the jury could have done if properly instructed falls woefully short of that burden. So again, we're speculating as to what a juror might or might have thought. The fact of the matter is here, this court has a model jury instructions publicly available on the website. We were the key language from the instruction. It's called chain of custody, but the key language goes to that the government has to prove that the drugs it's saying were sold, that it's presenting to you, the jurors, are the same drugs that were allegedly purchased by the undercover agent. If you have a reasonable doubt about that, they have to prove that beyond a reasonable doubt. That language was removed. That was improper in this case. And therefore, the jury verdict needs to be thrown out, and we need to move forward from there, because it's clear that there's no other, the court in justifying the removal of language said there was 32 other times the jury was told about reasonable doubt, but never in this context. And I would just say too, there's other, I think model instruction 3.08 deals with saying that you have to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that it occurred on or about a particular date that the government is alleging. Again,
on or about's been around for a long time. And it's just, if you say on or about, let's say October 15, well, it's, you know, it can be close and you can still win.
But that's not an element of the offense, right? It's not, it has to have occurred on a particular date. So that's my only point about that is that taking the government's position is going to require a wholesale reworking of the model.
Isn't the on or about language there to avoid unconstitutional variances? It's a notice issue. You can't indict someone for doing something on June 1st and then convict them for having done something on November 1st, right?
But the point being is that here you can't convict somebody of selling drugs if the drugs you're saying that they sold are not the drugs that you're presenting in court, right? If there's a reasonable doubt about that. So I would say it's the same argument, which is why I bring it up.
Okay.
Because there are, as Haywood and Winship both said, every fact necessary. Right. So the fact that drugs were sold is the most necessary fact in a drug distribution case. So, I would say that this jury instruction has been around for over 20 years, and Clark is from 1970. So, again, this is not a new jury instruction. It's been given throughout this circuit. In fact,
we understand your argument. Thank you very much, Mr. Orlando.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Romano. The court will take the matter under advisement.